This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome to the show. If you have never done so and you've been listening for a while, hopefully enjoying what you hear, we would love for you to take a moment and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much in advance for that. It just helps our show find its way to the ears of new listeners and all of the Apple algorithms and all that jazz. So a very useful show today as two TriDot coaches walk us through making the most of our indoor workouts. Now, there are lots of reasons to head indoors, and I, for one, want to know how to use those sessions most effectively. So joining us to talk through all of this is professional triathlete and TriDot coach Elizabeth James. Elizabeth is a USAT Level 2 and Ironman U certified coach who quickly rose through the triathlon ranks using TriDot, from a beginner to top age grouper to a professional triathlete. She's a Kona and Boston Marathon qualifier who has coached triathletes with TriDot since 2014. Elizabeth, hello, hello.
Well, hello. I always look forward to recording a new episode, so it's great to be here with you guys.
Next up is Coach Jeff Rains. Jeff is a USAT Level 2 and Ironman U certified coach who is a Master of Science in Exercise Physiology and was a D1 collegiate runner. He has over 50 Ironman event finishes to his credit and has coached hundreds of athletes to the Ironman finish line. And Jeff Rains, at the time we are recording this podcast, you are fresh off Ironman California 2022. You had a great race that day. How are you feeling?
Oh, thanks, Andrew. It was a great race. I'm still hobbling around a bit, actually. and after just dealing with crazy winds out there and cooler temperatures, hitting everybody this time of year, I'm actually excited to train indoors more for a little while. So perfect timing for this episode.
I'm Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our indoor training main set topic, and then we'll wind things down with our cool down. On the cool down today, Vanessa will be interviewing two athletes from the UK who just raced in Kona. They actually lived with me in Dallas to heat train for the conditions in Kona. So we'll hear what stories they share from their time in the Harley household getting ready for Kona. Before we get too deep into the show today, I want to give a shout out to our good friends at UCAN. Here at TriDot, we are huge believers in using UCAN to fuel our training and our racing. In the crowded field of nutrition companies, what separates UCAN from the pack is the science behind Live Steady, the key ingredient in UCAN products. While most energy powders are filled with sugar or stimulants that cause a spike and crash, UCAN energy powders, powered by Live Steady, deliver a steady release of complex carbs to give you stable blood sugar and provide long-lasting energy. I personally fuel my workouts with the orange-flavored Edge gel. They just released a pineapple-flavored gel. I got to get my hands on that. I love pineapple. So head to their website, ucan.co, and use the code TRIDOT to save 20% on your entire order. It used to be 10%, but the fine folks at UCAN have upped it to 20% off for TRIDOT Nation. So ucan.co, promo code TRIDOT.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
An overwhelming majority of the time, as coaches, Sherpas, and fellow athletes, we are helpful to the athletes around us at the races. However, even the most experienced coaches and athletes can make mistakes and unintentionally affect the race of someone else. Jeff, Elizabeth, have you ever, accidentally of course, done something on race day that ever so slightly could have messed up another athlete? Jeff Rains, what did you do and who did you do it to?
Actually, this is a great question. Due to Worlds 70.3 happening right now, this weekend, in St. George, because when we were there earlier in the year, I was there coaching on site, and one of my athletes, Paul, was racing, and he was early on the run course, and I saw him, and his wife didn't get to see him in T2, and so she wanted some film. So I was there with my cell phone filming 10 seconds, kind of, I guess, on his hip. And we got a run penalty for, quote, coaching. And he had to stop.
My goodness.
Had to stop and stand there for I think it was 2 minutes. And, you know, he was stretching and all that. And the crowd all around us was booing because they knew I was literally just filming him to send him footage or to send footage to his wife. you know, I know rules are rules. But I added 2 minutes to his race right there. Sorry, Paul.
Yeah, getting your athlete a time violation definitely qualifies here. Elizabeth, what is this answer for you?
I don't think I've got quite a story like that. I've been thinking as Rains was talking, like, oh my gosh, what am I going to say? Another one of these crazy warm-up questions. Got to come up with an answer for. I mean, you know, something could have happened accidentally, and I didn't know it. The only story that I could think of that like impacted another athlete actually wasn't accidental. So let me explain first. It was an Olympic distance race many years back. And so athletes were allowed to rack their bikes wherever was available, just kind of on a first come, first serve basis. So local Olympic race that I was doing, and I got to transition very early in order to snag a, you know, front row outside spot that would make my transition as fast as possible. So set everything up, had gone for my warm-up jog, and I was coming back into transition to grab my cap and goggles before heading to the swim start. And I see this gentleman moving my stuff and like trying to shift my bike over to the side so that he can put his bike on the end of the rack and like steal this prime transition spot just last minute. So let's just say that his bike did not stay there. He did not get to rack there. And so it probably did impact his race a little bit. But it wasn't,
I should say, so
accidental on my part. I mean,
he was trying to impact your race.
Exactly. I mean, you get there late, you don't get that spot. So
those are the rules.
I guess I did impact his race, but not necessarily by accident. That's the only story I could think of there.
The one I'll give here, and I actually just apologized to Kurt Madden for this when I saw him in Kona a few weeks ago. Jeff, my story also comes from the 2021 Ironman World Championship in St. George, which of course took place in May of 2022. And Kurt went by us, same as you, Jeff. He went by us on the run course. And Kurt is always at these races. He's in contention, right? He's in contention for a podium spot, a top five spot, a top 10 spot. And so, you know, we all just kind of know when you have Kurt coming up, you know, pull him up on the tracker, see what place he's in, give him those splits. Earlier in the day, I looked at it. Kurt was in second place. He was well behind first place, but he was also well ahead of third place. And so I was like, okay, cool. Like Kurt's going to, he's got this on cruise control. He's going to come home in second. And so I hadn't checked on Kurt Madden in his splits in a while. And all of a sudden, Kurt comes by us and he's like, Andrew, where am I? And guys, I was so confident that he was still in second place that I was like, yep, Kurt, you're in second. You're doing great. Keep on trucking. And so Kurt leaves, he continues down the road, and I pull him up on the tracker just to see, out of curiosity, like, oh, I just want to confirm that what I just told him was correct. And I lied to Kurt Madden. I pull it up on the tracker, and Kurt had slipped from second to third. So, and I felt so bad because Kurt is just running along in place thinking he's in second place when in fact he was third. And that was all because of me. I lied to Kurt Madden. I apologized to him in Kona. He laughed it off. That's my story here. I'm curious what our audience has to say here. So make sure you're a part of the I Am Trot Facebook group. We throw these questions out every single Monday when the new show comes out. I want to hear, have you accidentally done anything on race day that could have thrown another athlete off just a little bit? Maybe you were racing yourself. Maybe you were spectating, sherping. Can't wait to hear what stories you have to share on this one.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
The TriDot team has been learning from Oxford University professor Kieran Clark, founder and CEO of T Delta S Global, all about the benefits of drinking the revolutionary Oxford Ketone Ester. Delta G ketone drinks are revolutionizing the way many of us at TriDot fuel our triathlon training and racing. The more we've used Delta G drinks, the more we've been struck by the noticeable impact Delta G Performance and Tactical have on our recovery. As athletes who train almost every day of the week for three different sports, Delta G's boost to recovery is a total game changer for triathletes. Try adding just a small serving of the ketone ester mixed into your post-workout drink and experience that recovery boost for yourself. As you try to recover when you're going to sleep, try just a small drink before bed. The team at Delta G even offers free 15-minute one-on-one consultations where you can learn more about jumpstarting that post-workout recovery with Delta G ketones. So head to the website, deltagketones.com, and learn more about fueling with Delta G and book your free 15-minute consultation. When you place your order, use code TRIDOT20 for 20% off your Superfuel ketone drinks. Sometimes it's the weather that pushes us indoors. Sometimes it's traffic. Sometimes it's our schedules. And sometimes it's just our own convenience or preferences. Whatever reason we find ourselves training indoors, there are certainly ways to make the most of those training sessions. Jeff, Elizabeth, I'm curious for each of you, what percentage of your bike sessions are you doing inside versus outside? And what sessions do you find yourself doing indoors most often? Elizabeth?
This is such a great question. And I mean, as you pointed out, there's a number of reasons to go indoors. And, you know, it's not just weather. It's not just preferences. Sometimes it is schedules, convenience. Like, gosh, there's a number of reasons why I've found myself training indoors throughout the years. As I was kind of thinking about this, though, it's actually changed for me throughout the years. And I'm kind of season by season. It's also been influenced a little bit by where I was living. So the training location and then the training partners that I've had around me at that time. So, for example, when I first started in the sport, I didn't have access to a lot of indoor equipment. I was also living in an apartment in Nebraska, so I didn't have, you know, the full pain cave setup either. I trained primarily outdoors and just shifted sessions if I needed to due to the poor weather conditions, because that was truly my option. Like, I was biking outdoors, I was running outdoors, and that's what I needed to do to get the sessions in without a lot of access to indoor training equipment. Then moving down here to Texas, we did kind of set up our big home gym. You know, the weather's better down here in Texas to be training outside more often. But there was a time where I was so heavily focused on increasing my bike and run thresholds. I actually wasn't doing a lot of racing at the time, really just focused in on the training. And so I always joke that my training during that time was on the tees. So it was on the trainer, on the treadmill, and at the track. So I think during that time, like 80 to 85% of my training sessions were indoors. Only some of those sessions, you know, the ones on the track or like the easy long runs, those were outdoors. So that was primarily indoor. But then this past summer, I spent 10 weeks in Boulder, Colorado, and I only did a couple sessions on the bike trainer or the treadmill with very specific intervals in mind. And so I'd say 95% of my sessions were outdoors there. So, gosh, I realize that doesn't give you a great answer for your question, because it has changed so much for me with the different locations that I've lived, the different places that I had for training, kind of the primary training goal that I had at the time, and then just the availability of indoor training equipment. So I've literally gone from 90% outdoors to 90% indoors. Right now, I'd say I have a pretty even split, real close to 50-50. But I guess I'm mixing it up a little bit more than I realized.
Yeah, something that would be curious for me to hear, Elizabeth, because I think for most of us listening, we know that throughout the year, throughout our season, just as weather changes, as family schedules change, it probably changes just kind of like your experience, where you find yourself in certain seasons indoors or outdoors more often. I mean, do you find the effectiveness of your training changes through how much time you're spending indoors versus outdoors, or is training and you see the improvement either way?
Well, here's where I think it has a lot to do with what your goal is of that training block. For example, like when I wasn't going to be racing anytime in, you know, the next 6 months, I spent a lot of time inside because it was really just threshold development. There was no skill needed. And so, you know, I could really put my head down and just go to town on those trainer intervals without having to worry about like, okay, you know, I need to put this power to the conditions of an outdoor ride and cornering and making sure that, you know, I have good bike handling skills to be able to translate that power to the road. And so, yeah, I'd say that my indoor training was incredibly effective and really hit the goals that I wanted it to. But I mean, training outdoors, if you're going to be racing outdoors, which we do, that you can't get by without that either. So it's really just, you know, what is that particular goal of that training block in that season? And I think indoor training can be incredibly effective, super efficient, and great gains to be had.
Yeah, I think I spend for the bike training, I certainly spend more time indoors as opposed to outdoors. And honestly, it's just for the convenience factor. It's just it's much easier to have my bike set up on the trainer and to midway through the day or right after work, you know, hop on and knock out that session without prepping a bike and prepping gear and all of that kind of stuff. Jeff Raines, for you, what is your kind of balance and mix of indoors versus outdoors?
I think a lot's like EJ. I mean, 10, 12 years ago when I was new to the sport, there weren't a lot of smart trainers and running with power and I was younger and income and all those things. I didn't have a gym membership. I couldn't afford these things. But now I'm predominantly indoors. I'd say on the bike, I'm 90% indoors. I'd say a lot of it's because I have kiddos now and we have soccer games Saturday morning and stuff like that. So I might start a 4 a.m. Ruby or Zwift ride or something like that. But also where I live currently, there's not a lot of safe or good places to ride outdoors. And so I'd say 9 out of 10 rides, I am indoors. And as I get closer to race day, I'll get a little bit more outdoors. Or if I get a new piece of equipment or something, I want to get outside and test those skills that EJ was referring to, the bike handling skills. I like to do, if we do our two rehearsals, 2 weeks out and 4 weeks out, the 4 week out one, excuse me, I like to always do outdoors if I can, nail it. And if everything goes well, then that second rehearsal 2 weeks out, I will sometimes do that indoors, just for safety, and don't want to risk an injury or maybe a wreck, knock on wood, or a bike mechanical.
So both of you have a solid roster of athletes. You are excellent coaches. And so you have a good group of athletes that you're working with at any given time. Let's kind of take that same question and apply it to your athletes. I mean, what are you seeing other people do? We've all kind of shared how we balance it between heading outside versus staying indoors. For your athletes that you coach, I mean, how often are they staying indoors for training? Does it vary quite a bit from person to person? Or are there some trends that you see amongst all of the triathletes you coach? Jeff, what do you think?
Yeah, I find a lot of my athletes have to push their workouts around a little bit. A lot of it's travel and work, family plans, especially on the weekends. There are definitely ways to get it done, but it is definitely unique person to person. I think there's a really cool, you know, I try to create a fun team aspect for my athletes. We will all log in together, you know, on Ruby or Zwift and ride together even. And there's a gamification, a fun community aspect. And so for those who can't get out on the roads maybe every single weekend safely with a group and SAG or an aid support like that, you know, a lot are really wanting to take advantage of these kind of gamification or these fun kind of Zwift Ruby group rides that provides just that safety, and you can do them at any time of the day. So we can start in the dark in unique hours, but there's definitely good and bad of doing too much of that, though. Too much of the indoor can create bad habits. And so there's a right way and a wrong way to train indoors for sure.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit about that specifically here in a moment. So I'll fight the urge to go ahead and ask you what some of those bad habits are, but just know that I will ask you about that here in about 10, 15 minutes. Elizabeth, with your athletes, what balance are you seeing them have between indoor and outdoor?
I would echo a lot of what Raines just said. It does vary athlete to athlete, but I think some of the things that I see are kind of a limitation due to weather conditions, more than anything else. I mean, some athletes that live in a more northern area do have conditions that are just unsafe for cycling or running during a couple months of the year. And safety is always going to be the top priority for choosing, you know, an indoor workout over an outdoor workout. And so, I mean, for me, I'm a wimp when it comes to the cold. and I'll choose indoor because it's just more comfortable. For some of the athletes, though, it's not a question of comfort. It's really just a question of safety. And they need to make sure that they're being safe and able to complete those training sessions. As Jeff mentioned, family can also be a major influence on how much of the training needs to be done in the early mornings or just in close proximity to the family. I think that is probably one of the most common trends that I see, at least with the athletes that I coach, and especially those with younger children. They may spend more time training indoors so that they can wake up, efficiently do a session while the rest of the family's sleeping, and then you know, be available to help the kiddos get ready for school on the weekday mornings or attend their activities. And I think that's one of the major things that I see is parents really wanting to make sure that they don't miss out on that family time. They don't miss children's events. They don't miss the sporting activities. They're really looking for that balance of efficiently training, which comes, you know, with that home gym aspect of, hey, you know, I can go take my bike somewhere else to ride and get this session done, but it's going to take me twice as long, or I can quick hop on the trainer, get this knocked out, and then still be there for my family for the rest of the day.
So talk to us, y'all, about the benefits of training inside versus outside. Because Elizabeth, you referenced a little bit earlier, you know, you can kind of see different benefits during the times of year. You know, there's certain things you can focus on indoors, there's certain things you can focus on when you're outdoors. You know, does it matter to our athletes? I mean, how much you're training indoors versus outdoors? Elizabeth, what do you think?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here, both with, you know, indoor and outdoor bike workouts, indoor and outdoor run workouts, like how much time should you spend on each? So I think let's just kind of go through and talk about some of the pros and cons. So beginning with the bike, I mean, as we've already mentioned, doing the bike indoors, you know, it's time efficient and it's safe. And there's a number of different settings that you can use depending on the goal of the workout. And I mean, Reins has already alluded to some great options with, you know, the community and being able to connect with others, even if you are still indoors. You know, depending on what type of ride you're doing, you might be looking at heart rate, you might be looking at power, you might be doing specific intervals. You know, there's things that you might be focused on in terms of cadence, where an indoor ride can help you really zero in on the thing that you're focusing on for that particular session. So lots of pros there in terms of the focus, the efficiency, and the safety. But as we mentioned, there are some cons to it too. For example, the lack of bike handling skills. And so that's where, you know, if you're not racing in the near future, yeah, you can accomplish a whole lot inside. But if you're going to be racing outside, I'm a firm believer in you got to be riding your bike outside too. You need to learn how to shift gears properly. You need to corner. You need to understand how to gauge your effort level and not just have the trainer, you know, take everything for you.
And we've even talked a little bit, Elizabeth, just anecdotally, as our team has traveled to Ironman races, 70.3 races, we always get to as many of those as we can throughout the year to cheer on our athletes. I think we've seen an uptick in on-course wrecks and people just not being aware of where their bike is on the road in conjunction with other riders and people going through aid stations and missing handoffs or wrecking during a handoff, just all sorts of incidents. That anecdotally, our belief is more people are riding indoors all the time. And so those skills, you know, those shoulder muscles, those handling skills, they get a little rusty and you get out there on race day and you become a liability to other people on course because you haven't spent some time outdoors. So definitely a factor. Make sure you are confident in your handling, both for yourself and for the athletes around you, so that you don't have a story to tell. Like in our warm-up question this morning where you wrecked somebody because your handling skills weren't quite up to snuff.
Absolutely. Well, and even on top of that, just positioning. I mean, sometimes you won't necessarily ride the same way indoors as you would outdoors. And I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit more too.
Oh,
but
true.
I mean, there are some athletes that go outside and they're like, oh, like aero's killing me. It's like, well, you know, how much time did you spend riding an aero ahead of the race? And if you're always upright on the trainer indoors, like that can have an impact too, that your body just isn't used to that position. So definitely some things that, you know, if you're going to be racing outside, you need to be outside just to to make sure that all of those are top notch.
Jeff, that was a great list from Elizabeth. Anything to add there on pros and cons indoors versus outdoors that you teach your athletes?
Yeah, I think we definitely have to talk about smart trainers and erg mode.
Yes.
I'll briefly roll through it, but you know, there's a number of reasons why we buy a smart trainer, right? And couple of the big ones are we want power. We want to have watts.
It's the watts, Jeff. I got to know my
exactly.
watts.
Exactly. You buy that so you can have power indoors, right? And then I say that maybe the other 50% might be erg mode, automating your workouts. So maybe you're using a third-party app to automate your workout. So you don't have to switch gears. Cadence, you know, whether you increase your cadence by 10 or not, the watts will always stay the same, right? That smart trainer is so smart that it senses any change or anything like that, and it will always keep you in the automated and prescribed watts that you were supposed to hold, right? Now, it's also safe, you know, safer than riding outdoors, and it's, you know, easy to set up when you have some of these gamification aspects. But for the most part, we have power indoors, and we have this erg mode. Free ride mode is where it's similar to riding outdoors. You shift a gear, you know, a gear harder on your bike, then, you know, it's gonna feel harder on the smart trainer. So that's free ride mode. And if your cadence lowers or raises, the watts will lower and raise. But for the most part, I think most are using it for the erg mode, right? And so let's just say you have a 60-minute tri-dot workout, you load your workout into a Zwift or a Ruby, and you just don't stop pedaling for 60 minutes. You will get 100 Trainex score. You will hit every single watt exactly like you were supposed to, right? But that's good, and it can be bad, right? And so I would say in our developmental phase, our preseason, our early season, we're really, like EJ said, we're really wanting to develop our thresholds. We are really, really wanting to focus just on that internal power, getting stronger. And so in developmental, we may use erg mode more often than let's say maybe stamina or as we get into that race prep closer to race day. Now, what I do is I have my athletes towards the end of developmental, maybe one out of your three bike workouts per week, you will do in free ride mode. Typically, it's that Thursday one, and at least in Tri-Dot for most of us, Thursday tends to be that slightly easier workout, or even if you are early into stamina or race build, that might even be all zone two. And so as we near the end of developmental and start early stamina, we need to start kind of mixing back in a little bit more free ride so that we don't create bad habits. Too much erg mode can be bad. So like if we're, let's just say you had a 2-hour ride and you have it in erg mode, you're automating it. And yeah, Zwift is over there on the laptop and it's running my workout. If I just don't stop pedaling, I'll be good. But then maybe over here on this table, you got a movie, right? You're watching that movie.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
As our minds drift, maybe deep, you know, into longer stamina sessions or whatever, we tend to maybe not focus as much when we get tired. Maybe subconsciously we tend to drop the cadence and maybe kind of quote maybe a bigger gear where we're pushing a bigger gear, so to speak. And so over time, doing that too much as your cadence starts to fall, but the watts stay the same, you're mashing more, right? And the cadence is lower. You're using bigger muscle groups. And what it can teach you to do is become a lower cadence rider. It can create bad habits. So then let's just say race day's coming up. Oh, maybe I should get outside more. Or maybe you have a B or C race coming up. You might find yourself not able to translate those watts to the road. I've seen that a lot. Doing so much indoor erg mode automated workouts, it's great. You know, in that off season or those winter months, maybe you added 25 watts to your threshold. That's amazing. But then if you maybe continue that too long or don't add in some free ride because the smart trainer is doing kind of all that work for you, that doing some free ride or getting outside for the first few rides back, it's hard to hit some of those watts. So there's a time and a place to do that. And there's also a time and a place to free ride versus erg mode. My Tuesday rides, I like to always erg mode, automate it, download it. There's a lot of quality.
It's got the intervals in there.
Yeah. Nail that. Thursdays, you know, maybe every third one I'll do in free ride. And then maybe every other or every third Saturday kind of long ride, that brick workout, I will free ride it as well.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you talked about, you know, some workouts are great for it, but not all. I mean, one of the things that I, you know, tell my athletes, if they see 30-90s on their schedule, it's like, no, we're not using erg mode for that. Like, I want those 30 seconds to be all out. I want that to be, you know, a good VO2 effort, max effort for you. And so, you know, using erg mode might limit your max there with what comes through in the prescribed workout. So, you know, don't use erg for that. You know, similarly, it's difficult to do spin-ups or one-legged drills while in erg mode. So you can toggle it on and off as, you know, you're going through the workout. This is just a quick side note, but I've always thought this was so cool. And so I want to mention it here while we're talking about erg mode. So erg mode comes from the Greek word ergasia, which means work. And so using erg mode, like on your trainer, you are forcing yourself to work at a certain level. And I always thought that was so cool. It's like one of my little tidbits that I like sharing with athletes. And they're like, what is this? Like, what is ERG? And it's like, oh, this is, that's work mode. That's where we're going to go to work when we do these intervals. But yeah, like Rain said, I'll encourage athletes to use kind of that free ride or the simulator mode, because they need to understand, you know, how to shift gears with the terrain, to pay attention to their heart rate, to keep things within, you know, that prescribed zone, even without the automation of the smart trainer. And so I think that's also a great way to transition. And I know we're, you know, talking primarily indoors now, but to transition from indoor to outdoor. If you've spent months and months indoors and have been doing all of your workouts in erg mode, like, let's take erg mode off. Let's, you know, start to understand the pacing, our effort, where your heart rate's at, and then let's take that outdoors. And then Andrew, I know at the end you kind of ask, you know, does it matter how much you're doing indoors versus outdoors? Like, it does, but it's to such a widely varying degree depending on each athlete. As I said earlier, we're going to be racing outdoors. We need to be outdoors. But how much? Well, just enough to be safe and comfortable racing. And I think that's going to vary athlete to athlete.
All right. So let's spend the back part of our main set here just talking about getting our indoor sessions done. You guys have helped really break down the pros and cons and how often we should be getting indoors versus outdoors. Super helpful stuff. Let's get a little tangible here with what we're using, how we're using it in those indoor sessions. When we take our bike sessions indoors, what do we need from a tech or like an equipment perspective to execute those sessions?
Well, for the bike, if you're going to be indoors, you need to be able to put your bike on something, an apparatus, right, to spin indoors. There are, you know, smart or dumb trainers, they call them. And then there are wheel on and wheel off. So largely, it's the back wheel is going to be rolling on a roller. That would be maybe more of an elementary or kind of that dumb trainer, we would call it. Now, there are smart trainers that have power that are rollers where your back wheel of the bike does roll on the roller, but those tend to be a little bit less accurate, a little bit lower end on the expense spectrum there. And so you kind of get what you pay for. Those higher end smart trainers will typically be a wheel off.
Is it worth it, Jeff, for somebody who might be thinking about this upgrade? Is it, if you can spend the money, is it worth getting the direct on and not where your back wheels on the belt, or is it just kind of personal preference?
Hands down, yes, I would get it. I personally would never use a smart trainer with a wheel on roller. I would take the back wheel off, hook your chain onto the cassette of the actual smart trainer, because the watts might be 10% different. So your bike's power might be reading 200 watts, but that lower end wheel on smart trainer might be 30 watts different. And then by the time you get closer to race day, there's just a lot of going on. Like, well, what should I be doing day to day, and which one is smarter or which one's better? So to relieve that headache, that alone. Every brand's going to have three tiers, basically, that kind of high end one. The extra bells and whistles, a middle tier, and then that kind of more beginner one.
So similar question, Jeff, along those lines, because I've gotten this question before. I have like the middle tier. For example, I have the Tacx Flux. The top tier is the Tacx Neo. I know Tronic coach John Mayfield has the Tacx Neo. They both, you take the back wheel off, you put the chain around the cassette of the trainer. They both measure the watts super accurately. Is there a reason to upgrade to the highest end one? Are those any better than the middle tier ones?
That's an awesome question. If the funds are there, I would get the higher end because it's going to have, okay, typically the higher end are within 1% accurate. Those middle tiered ones are usually, you know, 3 to 8% accurate. And then that kind of 10% ish for those kind of lower tiered ones. Also, your higher end ones will have like higher attainable watts. They might have like ground simulation quality. They might have incline functionality. They will weigh less. So if you're going to travel with it, they're easier to fold up, some of the higher end ones, just things like that. Those extra bells and whistles do make it more. Now, if you're going to use like a call it that dumb trainer or without watts, you will need kind of like a bike speed and cadence sensor to sync with your watch to kind of help guess your speed a little bit better, close that gap, the mileage, make sure it's a little bit more accurate. You're also going to want to make sure your front and back wheel are the same height off of the ground. So some of these kind of smart trainers, you can actually change the height of that so you don't have to have that block under the front wheel. Those kind of dumb trainers, let's say, or the rollers, tend to be higher off the ground than the front wheel. And so you're going to want some sort of a block to help raise up that front and make it the same height off of the ground. If you're going to go the smart trainer route, you don't have to have like a third party monthly subscription to like a Ruby Zwift Full Guys. You don't have to have that. Some of the smart trainers have a free like phone app where you can type in watts and kind of adjust your workout that in that regard. But if you want it to kind of automate throughout and you just don't have to touch anything, you might, you know, be willing to invest in that, you know, $5, $10, $15 monthly subscription to a third-party app to get some of the gamification aspects. If you want heart rate to show up on the screen and you're using one of those, you might need an ANT stick. You know, there's a lot of Bluetooth going on, but for the heart rate to show up on those screens, like Zwift or something like that, and to see that in real time, you might want an ANT stick. I have to throw this out there before I finish up here is that, sure that you know the difference between your indoor smart trainer's power and maybe the power that is on your bike. Okay. Like when you do your monthly assessment, I have my athletes collect power on both their bike's power. They collect on the watch on the side, and then maybe they're using a Zwift or something to do their 20-minute bike test and collecting the smart trainer's power. At the end, let's see how they compare. Oh, they're 5 watts off. Oh man, they're 25 watts off. Because what you can do on the home screen of these apps is you can tell Zwift or Ruby or whatever, which power to have your smart trainer run the workout off of. So if you're finding that your bike's power is 30 watts different, well, you can have that session automate. Your smart trainer can Bluetooth the power off of your bike and run the workout off of that power, not the power of the smart trainer if they're different. So that's just something to take note of and be very intentional with.
This is another option that we haven't talked about yet. And I will admit that I have not done this because I do not own this. I've also been a little intimidated by it. There are some athletes that use just the indoor rollers too, but they don't have the trainer. Yeah, they just take their bike, put it on the rollers and ride inside. Really having to.
Because you can actually fall that way. Yeah. There's nothing holding
you
up.
And that's where, you know, maybe my concern for safety when I say it's much safer to ride indoors. It's safer for me to ride indoors with my Wahoo kicker. I don't know that it would be safer for me to ride indoors on the rollers. But it is another indoor option. We haven't mentioned that one yet.
And Jeff, quickly, because I didn't script this onto the sheet, but I know people are going to ask this question, and they're going to absolutely just destroy me in the press if I don't ask about this. But for folks who like going to spin classes, maybe they've bought a Peloton and the family shares a Peloton. I know Wahoo now sells a Peloton-like bike that's marketed for cyclists. For those actual like it's a bike inside that is not your tri bike. Is that a viable option? Is that equivalent to having your trainer on or your bike on a smart trainer, or is that a little bit different?
It is an option, and it is different. The Peloton in specific, they have watts. You can automate workouts onto those. But what I have found is that the watt readings on there tend to be a little generous. And so, for example, maybe like say on a Zwift or a Ruby, you averaged, I don't know, 20 miles per hour for that workout. That same workout done on a Peloton, you might average 24 miles per hour. And so even though it is a great tool, it is fun, I will always be an advocate of, yes, using those every now and then, mixing those in for something different fun. But I wouldn't rely solely on a stationary bike in a gym or a Peloton as a main resource for your training. We need to be on your bike. You need to be using the same length crank arm and cassettes and things like that. Because the geometry of those are a lot different than your bike. So my athletes that have the Peloton and or want to do a spin class, I say, absolutely, you can do that. Go do it with friends. I support the community. It's funner for you to meet three or four of your friends and do a spin class than just do it at home in the afternoon after work when you're tired. You know, I get it. And so there are pros and cons, but just don't rely too heavily on those.
I'm glad that you did bring that up, though, because, I mean, for me, I mean, I'll say this, and, you know, I've grown and developed over the years, but when I raced Ironman Texas in 2017, 75% of my workouts were on a spin bike at the gym. So I would do my weekday workouts after I was done in the classroom. I'd, you know, get in the car, drive to the gym, meet some friends at spin class. I would take my trot out workout there. The instructor was fantastic. Just let me sit in the back and do my trot out intervals. And then on the weekend, I would ride outside. But yeah, I mean, majority of my workouts headed into my first podium finish at an Ironman event were primarily done on a spin bike. And so yeah, it's better if you can be on your own bike, but don't let that be an excuse to not be consistent with your workouts. Because, you know, if it's no biking or spin biking, we can make that work on the spin bike.
So an athlete can absolutely set up their bike, record power and heart rate to their watch, and never have to put anything onto a screen in front of them. But oh boy, that is the driest way ever to live your life. There's a lot of things that we can do to entertain ourselves for hours on the bike. Elizabeth, talk to us about the different indoor training platforms and other ways to stay entertained.
Well, I know that you said, you know, not having a screen is a very dry way to live your life. But I think the first thing I want to take a look at here is just, you know, are you merely staying entertained, or is the technology you are using helping you best execute your workout? And so I would kind of challenge people on this. Like, I personally can't watch movies on the trainer. I can't listen to podcasts while on the trainer. Other athletes can and do, and they might be just fine. But when I'm on the trainer, like, the workout is my focus. If I try to watch a movie or listen to a podcast, it takes my focus away from the task at hand, and I'm really jeopardizing the quality of my session. And even if that's a, you know, zone 2 aerobic ride, I'm still focused in on my cadence. Okay, as Jeff was mentioning earlier, you know, if we let our mind drift, maybe your cadence is getting slower, and maybe you're creating bad habits if you're not in tune to what your body's doing. And so I would caution, you know, the entertainment aspect of it to make sure that it's something there in the background, but it's not dominating, you know, what is holding your attention so that you're losing the purpose of the session itself. But now something like Zwift, I can have that on with the programmed workout, and it seems to really enhance my session because it makes sure that I am adhering to that prescribed session. It's providing me with real time, easy to read metrics for power, cadence, heart rate, you know, along with the time remaining for each interval on the screen. And as dull as it may sound, I do think there is benefit to also turning off all of those extra noises and just being really in tune with how your body's feeling. There have been sessions that I've done where, you know, I don't turn on music. I don't have Zwift on. All I'm doing is using the Wahoo app to adjust the erg mode on my trainer, and it's like, okay, here I am. You know, I've got 12 minutes of this interval. I'm doing the first half at a, you know, 90 to 95 cadence. The second half of this, I'm doing it an 80 to 85 cadence, you know, really in tune with how does this feel? What is my heart rate doing? How is that shifting when I'm changing my cadence? Which one feels more comfortable to me? And all of those things can get lost if you have those distractions that may be entertaining. I get that sometimes we want the entertainment. We want to tune out a little bit and not feel all of the pain that indoor training can sometimes be. But there is a time and place to really be in tune to that as well and learn about, you know, those efforts and what your body's doing.
Oh, very interesting. I found for myself, Elizabeth, just kind of not intentionally, but just by happenstance. Like when I'm in quality intervals and I've got some zone four, zone five, even zone three, I try to stay engaged. And if I have a movie or a Netflix show or even a podcast going in the background, sometimes that can distract me from nailing my intervals like I want to. So it's usually just music for me during those times. So I can stay focused. And when I will allow myself to throw on Netflix or to throw on a sports game being played or to throw on a podcast, it's when I'm in zone two for long periods of time. So sometimes those Saturday threshold and holds, for example, I'll have music playing through the first half of the workout where all the quality is. And then when I hit just that 20, 30, 40, 45 minutes of zone two, and I'm going to be camped out there for a while, then I'll let myself throw something on. So just from hours and hours of sitting on a bike trainer ourselves, I mean, we all have tricks of the trade that we pick up just on helping those sessions go well for ourselves. Give us your next level tips for comfort, for effectiveness, for having a good quality indoor turbo session.
Well, some things to have nearby, I would say, are plenty of towels and then always one more water bottle than you're planning to drink. Goodness, there have been many times where, you know, I started off and I was like, I just have 15 minutes left, but my bottles are all completely gone. So I've learned now I always bring one more bottle than I think I'll need. Don't have to text Charles and ask him to go bring me more water. The other thing, if you're able to do so, and I understand that not everyone might be able to do this, but if you can, when you're doing those indoor sessions, put your phone on do not disturb or don't bring your phone in there with you. If you're using your phone for music, you know, let's try not to have that constant buzz. It's very hard to stay focused if your phone is just going off every couple minutes with notifications that are asking for your attention. Be intentional with your workout and don't have those constant distractions. And then last one, I'll throw this out there too. If you are doing a lot of workouts in erg mode, make sure that you're still varying your gearing in order to wear your cassette more evenly. I mean, if you're always in your favorite gear, chances are you're going to have to buy a brand new cassette when you go back outside because you've just prematurely worn down that one gear more than others.
Yeah, a couple things I'll add here. I do have a rocker plate underneath my trainer that helps. It just helps it feel more realistic because you're not stationary. You are rocking side to side like you do outside a little bit more. A lot of athletes ask me about that. I'm going to save my full review for a YouTube channel debuting soon. And so we don't go too long here, but I will say there's lots of options now. There's those rocker plates. Depending on which smart trainer you have, Wahoo and Tax are starting to put out different mounts where you can actually mount your trainer to a little cradle that will move your trainer side to side. So it feels like you're rocking as if you're riding outdoors. Look into some of those options because those kind of things, I think I spent $600 on my rocker plate, but those price points are coming down as there's more options on the market for that kind of stuff. So definitely worth looking into how to make those indoor trainer sessions feel a little bit more realistic, particularly if you do most of your training indoors.
Yeah, I'd even throw out not doing every single session in aero, and then vice versa. Don't do every one in aero, especially those quality zone fours. When you're indoors, a bunch of zone four, a bunch of zone five, all down in aero can create some injuries, some tightness, things like that. Our body position is a little bit different. indoors versus outdoors. And I know we've talked a little bit about that on other podcasts, but we tend to ride more forward on the seat outdoor. And then indoors, we tend to push back a little bit more, and the seat's wider, so there's more surface area, and then that can even lead to more chafing and stuff like that, and people learn to hate riding indoors. It's funny, because it's like, I've told people this, like, I can ride 3 or 4 hours outdoors, and I won't have any issues with chafing. But, you know, an hour, hour and a half indoor ride, it's like, I have issues. Like, I mean, it's, you know, saddle sore sometimes. And so make sure that you're, you know, lubing up, so to speak, before those indoor workouts. But also, yeah. You know, if you're really upper zone 4, zone 5, I would do a lot of that sitting up, because your race day is largely going to be zone 2, zone 3. In aero, right? And so a bunch of zone 4, zone 5 in aero. Now, I should say that zone 2, zone 3 is more long course, right? But just be cognizant of your fit and body position indoor, and I wouldn't do too much super high-end quality all in aero. Just make sure you're feeling good and there's no discomfort there. If in erg mode and automating a session, don't be afraid to bump the watts up or down. Right. So like in Zwift, let's say there are these white arrows on the top left hand corner of your screen. If you're feeling really good and you got an 8 minute set and there's 2 minutes left, don't be afraid to add 20 watts. You know, keep the integrity of the zone 4 tryout workout. Right. But you've got a window of zone 4. If you're feeling really good, maybe you want to up the watts, or maybe your cadence is falling and you can't get it back down, so you want to drop the watts to lower zone 4. So don't be afraid to bump the watts around when you're automating an erg mode session. I like to ride with my athletes. We all start together on fun courses like Ruby, and we start text threads and chats to stay entertained, right? And so we can even kind of, hey, this hill coming up, let's all kind of quote race up this hill, and we create little segments and fun. So that's something you might want to incorporate into some of the indoor sessions. Grab a friend.
Final question today, and it is a doozy. One perk of moving our bike training indoors is the proximity to our loved ones whilst working out. Assuming they are home, of course, what is one favor you've asked a family member to do for you while you are training on your bike, or maybe just a memorable encounter you've had in the heat of a indoor bike training session? Elizabeth.
Oh, I started smiling as you were reading this question, because there are so many stories here. Like
we've all done it.
Yes.
We've all taken advantage of just shooting a text. Hey, can you bring me a cup of water?
Oh, there are so many stories to pick from. I promise I will not share them all, but I'm going to share two of them here. Have been probably more times than I can count when I have been on the bike trainer until 8:25, and I mean, you guys know our staff call starts at 8:30. And so Charles is such a big help, and he has turned the shower on, picked out my clothes, and made my recovery shake so that I can finish up like my, you know, last couple minutes of recovery on the bike and take those 5 minutes to be, you know, showered, changed, in front of the computer with the video on. 5 minutes later, breakfast in hand, ready to go. So yeah, the quick turnaround from the workout to the work call is pretty quick. And he's doing a lot of things to make that happen. The other one I remember, I cannot remember which race we were leaving for, but I had not finished packing yet. And I mean, we were in a time crunch, but I really wanted to get this last session in before we left. And so Charles brought the suitcase into the hall near the bike trainer, and between intervals was like bringing clothes for me to say yes or no to. So he was like holding things up, like pack this, pack that, yes, no. And I know we talked earlier about, you know, staying focused during a session. So this would be an example of what not to do, you know, between intervals. But yeah, I have asked him to pack my bags for me so that we could go on vacation soon after getting off the bike.
The other thing I wanted to mention while sharing things that we do while on the trainer, I haven't gotten to bring this up yet, but I will often, we have a Traeger wood pellet grill. And so a lot of times for dinner, you know, I'm doing my trainer sessions right after work. And so it's while Morgan and I are kind of prepping dinner. And so, you know, she'll be doing the vegetables and the carbs, and I'll be doing the meat on the Traeger. And my Traeger actually has Wi-Fi capabilities. And so I have an app on my phone I can put a probe in the chicken, for example, if I'm cooking chicken. It usually takes about 30 minutes for my chicken to get to the correct internal temperature. And so I can do all of my quality, go downstairs, put the Traeger on the grill, go back up stills, continue to spend the balance of my time at zone two. And basically I'll just spin at zone two until my app tells me that my Traeger is at the correct temperature. And then I'll go down and take it off and we'll have dinner. And so that's something that it's not a family member cooperating with me in my trainer session. It's me and my grill cooperating with each other while I'm doing a trainer session. So if you ever on Strava, if you follow me on Strava and you see that I have like a 56 minute Tuesday trainer ride, and why did Andrew bail 4 minutes early? Well, my chicken probably got done, or my steak or my fish, whatever I'm grilling, probably got done just a little bit earlier than I expected, and it prompted me to get off the trainer and go ahead and fetch that meat off before it got too well done. So that's just kind of a humorous thing that I do between my grill and I while I'm on the bike trainer. Jeff Rains, what is this answer for you? Close this out.
Man, here. I don't know if I can top that, you know, literally grilling while biking, but this might top it, but I failed, so maybe it doesn't. So let me explain. Trying to change a poopy diaper while spinning.
Oh, that tops it. Absolutely.
I have a leather couch in my office next to my bike trainer, and I was really into it. I didn't want to mess it up, and so I was like, Ruby, come here. Climb on the couch. Bring me a diaper. You know, I tried, and let's just say it was a fail. Fail. So I had to get off and do the duty. But, you know, I'm dropping things. You know, I have a cart that I roll with a TV on it, and there's cords and my laptop wire. And I'm like having my kids like army crawl under. Don't hit the pedal. I'm going to hit you. I'm going to bonk your head. You know, so having the kids army crawl around the tables and stuff while I'm pedaling and trying not to get whacked. And then I guess the same as you, Andrew, is, you know, having my wife bring me another PB&J or go start the truck. So for the remote races, right, we had 10 minutes T2, right? You do your bike race and you had 10 minutes to start your run. Well, you know, I wanted to do it at a track near down the street. So I would have my wife start the car and have my drink ready and everything so I can just get off and jump in the truck and go. So I've done that.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
Welcome to the cool down, everyone. This is Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite level enthusiasm. Today, I have the pleasure of welcoming two guests from the UK who lived the triathlete dream of racing in Kona, and they also lived the tri-daughter's dream and stayed at the Harley household for 2 weeks. Chris and Natalie, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Now, you both qualified for Kona at Ironman Barcelona in 2021 without even expecting to. What was it like the moment you found out that you qualified?
Yeah, it's very surreal. So I actually had no idea. I finished the race. I met Chris after. We went and got the bikes, got food, went back to the hotel. It wasn't until I turned my phone on and I saw loads and loads of messages from friends and family saying, "You're going to Kona, like you've won." And I was like, "What?" Yeah, it turned out I won my age group and I had completely no idea. We had no expectations going into the race of winning. It was just to enjoy the day and finish the race. So yeah, to be honest, I just cried an awful lot. It was very, very emotional. But yeah, it was just an amazing feeling. We've watched it for years. So yeah, to be able to say that I'd qualified was just phenomenal.
Oh, I love that so much. And Chris, what was it like for you?
Yeah, it was a similar story, but mine was a bit more delayed. So I didn't win my age group. And so because of COVID, they weren't handing out the prize giving the night of the race or the night after. So you didn't know immediately. It was like a day later, you just sort of, you know, Nat won, so she knew straight away, but I didn't know whether I'd be going. And I just got an email the day after. I can't remember if it was the day we got back or the day before we got back, and just got an email saying you've qualified. And I was like, "Oh my God, we're both going." You know, it was totally surreal. But we sort of immediately started head scratching as to sort of, right, are we going to do this? Like, are we, you know, we've won Ironman. Like, did we enjoy it that much that we want to go and do one of the hardest ones in the world? But yeah, it was a good decision at the end of the day.
Oh, that's fabulous. Now, Chris, you are a staff member with Precision Fuel and Hydration. So Andy Blow hooked you up with Andrew Harley, who hooked you up with a place to stay in Dallas so you could train in the Texas heat, which is a little bit different from the UK. So how did those training sessions go in Texas? And did you feel like they actually helped you once you reached Hawaii?
100%. Yeah. I mean, we'd come off a pretty good summer in the UK for British summers anyway. It was sort of, you know, mid-20s most days. So you could get quite a lot of training done. But, you know, stepping off the plane in Texas and it's 40s Celsius every day was a total, you know, shock to the system. But it's exactly what we wanted, because, you know, we knew, we'd heard all the stories about Kona. We knew the conditions were tough. We knew they're some of the toughest in the world. So we needed somewhere equally tough to train. And yeah, as you mentioned, Andrew and Morgan, his wife, were absolutely fantastic at putting us up. And their cat, Pancake, obviously, he was a key host. And it was, you know, the training sessions, they were quite different because you have to sort of keep a lid on it quite a lot when you're training in the immense heat, because, you know, your physiological responses are a lot more exaggerated when racing in the heat, when training in the heat. And so it was a learning curve, but thankfully we were able to put quite a lot of scientific theory into practice and yeah, prepare our bodies the best way we could to help, you know, acclimatize to the heat and get used to very, very large sweat losses for fairly modest efforts, which is exactly what happens in Kona.
Yeah. And did you pack like an entire suitcase full of precision fuel and hydration products?
Pretty much. I mean, so we were out there for the PTO race, the US Open in Dallas. And so thankfully, you know, we have a base over in the US for products and stuff. So we didn't have to bring it from the UK. But then going on to Kona, as I'm sure you're aware, getting anything to Hawaii is, you know, carnage. So we had to literally, our bags were full to the brim of all these suspicious white powders of electrolytes that obviously we're looking at us thinking, but then, you know, everyone's in the same boat trying to take all their gels and stuff out with them. So I think quite a bit of it went with the bikes, which was good. But yeah, there was a lot of precision coming with us.
I'm sure. That's awesome. Racing Kona is the dream of so many triathletes. What were your highlights from the experience?
Gosh, there's too many. But for me personally, it was running up Palani Hill, which is about 11-10K into the race. I was at the water station, was grabbing all the water I could, got to the top, had this volunteer come up to me, pass me some water, and I was like, thank you, looked up, and it was Gianfredino. I was just blown away. Like, I had a smile on my face for the next 4 or 5 miles, and yeah, he said to me, have a good race. And yeah, that was like, honestly, like a massive highlight for me, for him to be there and support the amateurs and just, yeah, cheer us on. So, yeah, that was my highlight.
I didn't believe her. I was like, no, it wasn't.
Yeah, he told me I was hallucinating. Right. And I told him, he's like, you were hallucinating, like, it wasn't there. And then it took this volunteer to come past, and he's like, no, I can confirm, Gianfredino wasn't there.
I think I was just jealous that I must have been so out of it. He was probably there when I ran up Palani as well, because we raced the same day. Right. But I just totally didn't, you know, I couldn't even see 3 feet in front of me, so I was zoning out everything that I didn't need to, and turns out, you know, 3-time Ironman world champ was one of those people I zoned out.
That is so awesome.
One of the best points of the race, I think, was probably about 30K into the run, so quite deep into the race by now, and our race plan going into it had been sort of keep a lid on it and keep it under wraps for as long as you can to not burn any matches or as few as you can, because you see people going bang all the time. And so keep a lid on it to about 30K, and then if you've got something, then start opening the taps. And I sort of looked at the watch and went past the 30K and approaching the 19-mile mark, and just thought, right, well, I better just start opening the taps, and was able to just give a lot more than I actually thought would have been in the legs. So it was a really, really great moment for me personally, just knowing that, okay, I've worked pretty hard until here, and there's still a lot more to give. So a lot of lessons learned, which was great, and could continue that, you know, increased pace all the way to the finish line and enjoy the finish experience rather than the people that are sort of desperately crawling their way to the line because they can't wait for it to be over, quite literally.
Yeah, that's incredible. I love that you were able to do that and, you know, turn it up as soon as you got to that point. That's amazing that you had so much left in the tank, because as you said, a lot of times people are dying by that point in the race of any Ironman, let alone in that heat. So from my understanding, you actually were very fortunate and both of your parents were able to make it to the race. What was it like to have a support crew there, especially coming from such a far distance?
It was nice to have some sort of familiar faces on the island. We'd never been to Hawaii. They'd never been to Hawaii, either of our parents. And so, you know, we've grown up with them supporting us all local races across the UK. And every so often they come to one, you know, further afield. But to be able to sort of bring them to Hawaii was certainly a reward almost for all those years of standing in a field in rainy England. So it was really nice to have, as I said, familiar faces out on the course at certain points. Just, you only pass them for a couple of seconds, but it gives you, you know, maybe 10 minutes of boost after that. So it was certainly nice to experience it with them.
Yeah, I think it was a shock for them. They've never watched us do an Ironman. Obviously we've only done two, so it was a long day out for both of them. But they said they just enjoy the whole process. They just love the atmosphere. They just couldn't get over the atmosphere of the Kona race. Everyone was super friendly, and they just said, you know, meeting the pros as well, for them, they've only watched them a few times on TV, but seeing them in real life, it's just, you know, they didn't comprehend how fast they go and everything like that. And yeah, they just said that just the whole community, the triathlon community, is just such a nice place to be, and we couldn't really agree more, could we? We felt so at home, and we've come away with so many friends, so yeah.
Well, that's it for today, folks. I want to thank coaches Jeff Rains and Elizabeth James for talking about indoor bike training. Be on the lookout. Next week's episode, we will tackle indoor run training. So it's going to be a great conversation next week. A big thanks to Delta G and UCAN for partnering with us on today's episode. To experience UCAN's Live Steady products for yourself, head to their website, UCAN.co, and use the code TRIDOT to save 20% on your entire order. To see just how impactful Delta G ketones can be for your recovery, head to deltagketones.com and use code TRIDOT20 to get 20% off your order. Thanks for listening. We'll do it all again soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TRIDOT podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TRIDOT.com and start your free trial today. TRIDOT, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.